7. A sun like a dragon's eye, orange-yellow, like a fire opal with 7 glittering pendants swinging slowly through their long ellipses. The green third planet took 60 of Earth's years to complete its year. Lucky the man who sees his second spring. Ori translated a proverb of that world. The winters of the northern hemisphere, tilted by the angle of the ecliptic away from the sun while the planet was at its farthest from the sun, were cold, dark, terrible. The vast summers, half a lifetime long, were measurelessly opulent. Giant tides of the planet's deep seas obeyed a giant moon that took 400 days to wax and wane. The world was rife with earthquakes, volcanoes, plants that walked, animals that sang, men who spoke and built cities. A catalogue of wonders. To this miraculous, though not unusual, world had come, 20 years ago, a ship from outer space. 20 of its great years, Ori meant, something over 1,200 Terran years. Colonists and Hilfers of the League of All Worlds, the people on that ship were committing their work and lives to the newfound planet, remote from the ancient central worlds of the League, in the hope of bringing its native intelligent species eventually into the League, a new ally in the war to come. Such had been the policy of the League ever since, generations before, warnings had come from beyond the Hyades of a great wave of conquerors that moved from world to world, from century to century, closer toward the far-flung cluster of 80 planets that so proudly called itself the League of All Worlds. Terra, near the edge of the League heart zone, and the nearest League planet to the newfound planet Werrel, had supplied all the colonists on this first ship. There were to have been other ships from other worlds of the League, but none ever came. The war came first. The colonists' only communications with Earth, with the prime world Davenant, and the rest of the League, was by the Ansible, the instantaneous transmitter aboard their ship. No ship, said Ori, had ever flown faster than light. Here Falk corrected him. Warships had indeed been built on the Ansible principle, but they had been only automatic death machines, incredibly costly and carrying no living creatures. Light speed, with its foreshortening of time for the Voyager, was the limit of human voyaging then and now. So the colonists of Werrel were a very long way from home, and wholly dependent on their Ansible for news. They had only been on Werrel 5 years when they were informed that the enemy had come, and immediately after that the communications grew confused, contradictory, intermittent, and soon ceased altogether. About a third of the colonists chose to take the ship and fly back across the great gap of years to Earth to rejoin their people. The rest stayed on Werrel, self-marooned. In their lifetimes, they could never know what had become of their home world and the League they served, or who the enemy was, and whether he ruled the League or had been vanquished. Without ship or communicator, isolated, they stayed, a small colony surrounded by curious and hostile, high-intelligence life forms of a culture inferior, but an intelligence equal to their own. And they waited, and their sons' sons waited, while the stars stayed silent over them. No ship ever came, no word. Their own ship must have been destroyed, the records of the new planet lost. Among all the stars, the little orange-yellow opal was forgotten. The colony thrived, spreading up a pleasant seacoast land from its first town, which was named Altera. Then, after several years, Ori stopped and corrected himself. Nearly 6 centuries, Earth-style, I mean. It was the 10th year of the colony, I think. I was just beginning to learn history. But Father and you, Pretramaran, used to tell me these things before we made the voyage to explain it all to me. After several centuries, then, The colony had come onto hard days. Few children were conceived, still fewer born alive. Here again the boy paused, explaining finally, "I remember your telling me that the Alterans didn't know what was happening to them. They thought it was some bad effect of inbreeding, but actually it was a sort of selection. The lords here say it couldn't have been that no matter how long an alien colony is established on a planet, they remain alien. With gene manipulation, they can breed with natives, but the children will always be sterile. So I don't know what it was that happened to the Alterans. I was only a child when you and Father were trying to tell me the story. I do remember you spoke of selection towards a viable type. Anyhow, the colonists were getting near extinction when what was left of them finally managed to make an alliance with a native Werelian nation, Tevar. They wintered through together, and when the spring breeding season came, they found that Tevarans and Alterans could reproduce. Enough of them, at least, to found a hybrid race. The lords say that is not possible, but I remember you telling it to me." The boy looked worried and a little vague. "Are we descendants of that race?" "You are descended from the Altera Agat, who led the colony through the winter of the 10th year. We learned about Agat even in boy school. That is your name, Pretramarin, Agad of Charon. I am of no such lineage, but my great-grandmother was of the family Esme of Keo. That is an Alteran name. Of course, in a democratic society, as Earth's, these distinctions are meaningless, aren't they?" Again, Ori looked worried, as if some vague conflict was occurring in his mind. Falk steered him back to the history of Werel, filling out with guesses and extrapolation the childish narrative that was all Ori could supply. The new mixed stock and mixed culture of the Tevar Alteran nation flourished in the years after that perilous 10th winter. The little cities grew. A mercantile culture was established on the single North Hemisphere continent. Within a few generations, it was spreading to the primitive peoples of the southern continents, where the problem of keeping alive through the winter was more easily solved. Population went up. Science and technology began their exponential climb, guided and aided always by the books of Altera, the ship's library, the mysteries of which grew explicable as the colonists' remote descendants relearned lost knowledge. They had kept and copied those books, generation after generation, and learned the tongue they were written in, Galactica, of course. Finally, the moon and sister planets all explored, the sprawl of cities and the rivalries of nations controlled and balanced by the powerful Kelshak Empire in the old Northland. At the height of an age of peace and vigor, the Empire had built and sent forth a light-speed ship. That ship, the Altera, left Werel 18.5 years after the ship of the colony from Earth landed. 1,200 years, Earth-style. Its crew had no idea what they would find on Earth. Werel had not yet been able to reconstruct the principles of the Ansible transmitter, and had hesitated to broadcast radio signals that would betray their location to a possible hostile world ruled by the enemy the League had feared. To get information, living men must go and return, crossing the long night to the ancient home of the Alterans. How long was that voyage?
Over 2 Werelian years. Maybe 130 or 140 light years. I was only a boy, a child, Pretramarin, and some things I didn't understand, and much wasn't told me.
Falk did not see why this ignorance should embarrass the lad. He was much more struck by the fact that Ori, who looked 15 or 16, had been alive for perhaps 150 years, and himself. The Altera, Ori went on, had left from a base near the old coast town Tevar, her coordinates set for Terra. She had carried 19 people, men, women, and children, Kelshak for the most part, and claiming colonist descent.
The adults, selected by the Harmonious Council of the Empire for training, intelligence, courage, generosity, and Arlesh. I don't know a word for it in Galactica, it's just Arlesh. Ori smiled his ingenuous smile. Rail is the right thing to do, like learning things at school, or like a river following its course, and Arlesh derives from Rail, I guess.
Dao? Asked Falk. But Ori had never heard of the old canon of man. What happened to the ship? What happened to the other 17 people?
We were attacked at the barrier. The Xing got there only after the Altera was destroyed and the attackers were dispersing. They were rebels in planetary cars. The Xing rescued me off one. They didn't know whether the rest of us had been killed or carried off by the rebels. They kept searching over the whole planet, and about a year ago they heard a rumor about a man living in the eastern forest. That sounded like it might be one of us.
What do you remember of all this? The attack and so on?
Nothing.
You know how light-speed flight affects you. I know that for those in the ship no time passes, but I have no idea how that feels.
Well, I don't really remember it very clearly. I was just a boy, 9 years old, Earth-style, and I'm not sure anybody could remember it clearly. You can't tell how things relate. You see and hear, but it doesn't hang together. Nothing means anything. I can't explain it. It's horrible, but only like a dream. But then coming down into planetary space again, you go through what the Lords call the barrier, and that blacks out the passengers unless they're prepared for it. Our ship wasn't. None of us had come to when we were attacked, and so I don't remember it. Any more than you, Pretramarin. When I came to, I was aboard a Xing vessel.
Why were you brought along as a boy?
My father was the captain of the expedition. My mother was on the ship, too. You know, otherwise, Pretramarin. Well, if one came back, one's people would all have been dead long, long ago.
Not that it mattered. My parents are dead now, anyhow.
Or maybe they were treated like you, and wouldn't recognize me if we met.
What was my part in the expedition?
You were our navigator.
The irony of that made Falk wince. But Ori went on in his respectful, naive fashion.
Of course, that means you set the ship's course, the coordinates. You were the greatest Prosteny, a mathematician-astronomer, in all Kelshi. You were Prechnoa to all of us aboard, except my father, Har Waden. You are of the Eighth Order, Pretramarin. You remember something of that?
Falk shook his head. The boy subsided, saying at last, sadly,
I can't really believe that you don't remember, except when you do that.
Shake my head?
On Werel we shrug for no, this way.
Ori's simplicity was irresistible. Falk tried the shrug, and it seemed to him that he found a certain rightness in it, a propriety that could persuade him that it was indeed an old habit. He smiled, and Ori at once cheered up.
You are so like yourself, Pretramarin, and so different. Forgive me, but what did they do? What did they do to make you forget so much?
They destroyed me. Surely I'm like myself. I am myself. I'm Falk. He put his head in his hands. Ori, abashed, was silent. The quiet, cool air of the room glowed like a blue-green jewel around them. The western wall was lambent with late sunlight.
How closely do they watch you here? The Lords like me to carry a communicator if I go off by air car.
Ori touched the bracelet on his left wrist, which appeared to be simple gold links.
It can be dangerous, after all, among the natives.
But you're free to go where you like?
Yes, of course. This room of yours is just like mine across the canyon.
Ori looked puzzled again.
We have no enemies here, you know, Pretramarin, he ventured.
No? Where are our enemies, then?
Well, outside. where you came from.
They stared at each other in mutual miscomprehension. You think men are our enemies? Terrans? Human beings? You think it was they that destroyed my mind?
Who else?
Ori said, frightened, gaping. The aliens, the enemy, the Shing.
But,
the boy said with timid gentleness, as if realizing at last how utterly his former lord and teacher was ignorant and astray,
there never was an enemy. There never was a war.
The room trembled softly like a tapped gong to an almost sub-aural vibration. And a moment afterward, a voice, disembodied, spoke. The council meets. The slit door parted, and a tall figure entered, stately in white robes and an ornate black wig. The eyebrows were shaven and repainted high. The face, masked by makeup to a matte smoothness, was that of a husky man of middle age. Ori rose quickly from the table and bowed, whispering,
Lord Abundibot.
Har Ori, the man acknowledged, his voice also damped to a creaking whisper, then turned to Falk.
Agad Ramaran, be welcome. The Council of Earth meets to answer your questions and consider your requests. Behold now.
He had glanced at Falk only for a second, and did not approach either Werelian closely. There was a queer air about him of power, and also of utter self-containment, self-absorption. He was apart, unapproachable. All three of them stood motionless a moment, and Falk, following the other's gaze, saw that the inner wall of the room had blurred and changed, seeming to be now a depth of clear grayish jelly in which lines and forms twitched and flickered. Then the image came clear, and Falk caught his breath. It was Estrel's face, 10 times life-size. The eyes gazed at him with the remote composure of a painting.
I am Strella Siobelbel.
The lips of the image moved, but the voice had no locality, a cold, abstract whisper trembling in the air of the room.
I was sent to bring to the city in safety the member of the Werel expedition said to be living in the east of Continent One. I believe this to be the man.
And her face, fading, was replaced by Falk's own. A disembodied voice, sibilant, inquired,
Does Herr Ori recognize this person?
As Ori answered, his face appeared on the screen.
This is Agad Ramaran, lords, the navigator of the Altera.
The boy's face faded, and the screen remained blank, quivering, while many voices whispered and rustled in the air, like a brief multitudinous discussion among spirits speaking an unknown tongue. This was how the Shing held their council, each in his own room, apart, with only the presence of whispering voices. As the incomprehensible questioning and replying went on, Falk murmured to Ori, Do you know this tongue?
No, Prech Ramaran. They always speak Galactica to me.
Why do they talk this way instead of face to face?
There are so many of them. Thousands and thousands meet in the Council of Earth, Lord Abundibot told me, and they are scattered over the planet in many places, though Estach is the only city. That is Ken Kenyek now.
The buzz of disembodied voices had died away and a new face had appeared on the screen. A man's face with dead white skin, black hair, pale eyes. Agad Ramaran, we are met in council, and you have been brought into our council, that you may complete your mission to Earth, and if you desire, return to your home. The Lord Peleu Abundibot will bespeak you. The wall abruptly blanked, returned to its normal translucent green. The tall man across the room was gazing steadily at Falk. His lips did not move, but Falk heard him speak, not in a whisper now, but clearly, singularly clearly. He could not believe it was mind speech, yet it could be nothing else.
stripped of the character and timbre, the incarnateness of voice. This was comprehensibility, pure and simple, reason addressing reason. We mind speak so that you may hear only truth, for it is not true that we who call ourselves Shing or any other man can pervert or conceal truth in paraverbal speech. The lie that men ascribe to us is itself a lie. But if you choose to use voice speech, do so, and we will do likewise. I have no skill at bespeaking, Falk said aloud after a pause. His living voice sounded loud and coarse after the brilliant silent mind contact. But I hear you well enough. I do not ask for the truth. Who am I to demand the truth? But I should like to hear what you choose to tell me. Young Ori looked shocked. Abundabot's face registered nothing at all. Evidently, he was attuned to both Falk and Ori, a rare feat in itself in Falk's experience, for Ori was quite plainly listening as the telepathic speech began again. Men raised your mind and then taught you what they wished you to know, what they wished to believe. So taught, you distrust us. We feared it would be so. But ask what you will, Agad Ramaren of Werel. We will answer with the truth. How long have I been here?
6 days.
Why was I drugged and befooled at first? We were attempting to restore your memory. We failed.
Do not believe him, do not believe him, Falk told himself so urgently that no doubt the Shing, if he had any empathic skill at all, received the message clearly. That did not matter. The game must be played, and played their way, though they made all the rules and had all the skill. His ineptitude did not matter. His honesty did. He was staked now totally on one belief, that an honest man cannot be cheated, that truth, if the game be played through right to the end, will lead to truth. Tell me why I should trust you, he said. The mind speech, pure and clear as an electronically produced musical note, began again, while the sender, Abundabot, and he and Ori stood motionless as pieces on a chessboard. We whom you know as Shing are men. We are Terrans, born on Earth of human stock, as was your ancestor Jacob Agat of the first colony on Werel. Men have taught you what they believe about the history of Earth in the 12 centuries since the colony on Werel was founded. Now we, men also, will teach you what we know. No enemy ever came from distant stars to attack the League of All Worlds. The League was destroyed by revolution, civil war, by its own corruption, militarism, despotism. On all the worlds there were revolts, rebellions, usurpations. From the prime world came reprisals that scorched planets to black sand. No more light-speed ships went out into so risky a future. Only the FTLs, the missile ships, the worldbusters. Earth was not destroyed, but half its people were. Its cities, its ships and ansibles, its records, its culture, all in 2 terrible years of civil war between the Loyalists and the Rebels, both armed with the unspeakable weapons developed by the League to fight an alien enemy. Some desperate men on Earth, dominating the struggle for a moment, but knowing further counter-revolt and wreckage and ruin was inevitable, employed a new weapon. They lied. They invented a name for themselves, and a language, and some vague tales of the remote home world they came from. And then they went spreading the rumor over Earth, in their own ranks and the Loyalist camps as well, that the enemy had come. The Civil War was all due to the enemy. The enemy had infiltrated everywhere, had wrecked the League and was running Earth, was in power now, and was going to stop the war. And they had achieved all this by their one unexpectable, sinister, alien power, the power to mind lie. Men believed the tale. It suited their panic, their dismay, their weariness. their world in ruins around them, they submitted to an enemy whom they were glad to believe supernatural, invincible. They swallowed the bait of peace. And they have lived, since then, in peace. We of Estoch tell a little myth, which says that in the beginning the Creator told a great lie, for there was nothing at all, but the Creator spoke, saying, "It exists," and behold, in order that the lie of God might be God's truth, the universe at once began to exist. If human peace depended on a lie, there were those willing to maintain the lie. Since men insisted that the enemy had come and ruled the earth, we called ourselves the enemy, and ruled. None came to dispute our lie or wreck our peace. The worlds of the League are all sundered. The age of interstellar flight is past. Once in a century, perhaps, some ship from a far world blunders here, like yours. There are rebels against our rule, such as those who attacked your ship at the barrier. We try to control such rebels, for, rightly or wrongly, we bear and have borne, for a millennium, the burden of human peace. For having told a great lie, we must now uphold a great law. You know the law that we, men among men, enforce, the one law, learned in humanity's most terrible hour. The brilliant, toneless mind speech ceased. It was like the switching off of a light. In the silence, like darkness which followed, young Ori whispered aloud, "Reverence for life." Silence again. Falk stood motionless, trying not to betray in his face or in his perhaps overheard thoughts the confusion and irresolution he felt. Was all he had learned false? Had mankind, indeed, no enemy? "If this history is the true one," he said at last, "why do you not tell it and prove it to men?" "We are men," came the telepathic answer. "There are thousands upon thousands of us who know the truth. We are those who have power and knowledge and use them for peace. There come dark ages, and this is one of them, all through man's history, when people will have it that the world is ruled by demons. We play the part of demons in their mythologies. When they begin to replace mythology with reason, we help them, and they learn the truth. Why do you tell me these things?" "For truth's sake, and for your own." "Who am I to deserve the truth?" Falk repeated coldly, looking across the room into a Bundabot's mask-like face. "You were a messenger from a lost world, a colony of which all record was lost in the years of trouble. You came to Earth, and we, the lords of Earth, failed to protect you. This is a shame and a grief to us. It was men of Earth who attacked you, killed or mind-raised all your company. Men of Earth, of the planet to which, after so many centuries, you were returning. They were rebels from Continent 3, which is neither so primitive nor so sparsely inhabited as this Continent 1. They were using stolen interplanetary cars. They assumed that any light-speed ship must belong to the Xing, and so attacked it without warning. This we could have prevented had we been more alert. We owe to you any reparation we can make." "They have sought for you, and the others, all these years," Ori put in, earnest and a little pleading. Obviously, he very much wanted Falk to believe it all, to accept it, and to do what? "You tried to restore my memory," Falk said. "Why? Is that not what you came seeking here, your lost self?" "Yes, it is, but I..." He did not even know what questions to ask. He could neither believe nor disbelieve all he had been told. There seemed to be no standard to judge it all by. That Zov and the others had lied to him was inconceivable, but that they themselves were deceived and ignorant was certainly possible. He was incredulous of everything Abundabot affirmed, and yet it had been mind-sent.
in clear, immediate mind speech where lying was impossible, or was it impossible? If a liar says he is not lying, Falk gave it all up again. Looking once more at Abundabot, he said, "Please do not bespeak me. I would rather hear your voice. You found, I think you said, that you could not restore my memory?" Abundabot's muted, creaking whisper in Galactica came strangely after the fluency of his sending.
"Not by the means we used."
"By other means?"
"Possibly. We thought you had been given a parahypnotic block. Instead, you were mind-raised. We do not know where the rebels learned that technique, which we keep a close secret. An even closer secret is the fact that a raised mind can be restored."
A smile appeared for a moment on the heavy mask-like face, then disappeared completely.
"With our psychocomputer techniques, we think we can effect the restoration in your case. However, this incurs the permanent, total blocking of the replacement personality, and this being so, we did not wish to proceed without your consent."
The replacement personality. It meant nothing particular. What did it mean? Falk felt a little cold creep over him, and he said carefully, "Do you mean that in order to remember what I was, I must forget what I am?"
"Unfortunately, that is the case. We regret it very much. The loss, however, of a replacement personality of a few years' growth is, though regrettable, perhaps not too high a price to pay for the repossession of a mind such as yours obviously was, and, of course, for the chance of completing your great mission across the stars and returning at last to your home with the knowledge you so gallantly came to seek."
Despite his rusty, unused-sounding whisper, Abundabot was as fluent in speaking as in mind-speaking. His words poured out, and Falk caught the meaning, if he caught it, only on the third or fourth bounce. "The chance of completing," he repeated, feeling a fool, and glancing at Ori as if for support. "You mean you would send me, us, back to this planet I am supposed to have come from?"
"We would consider it an honor and a beginning of the reparation due you to give you a light-speed ship for the voyage home to Werrel."
"Earth is my home," Falk said with sudden violence. Abundabot was silent. After a minute, the boy spoke.
"Werrel is mine, Pretchremarin," he said wistfully. "And I can never go back to it without you."
"Why not?"
"I don't know where it is. I was a child. Our ship was destroyed. The course computers and all were blown up when we were attacked. I can't recalculate the course."
"But these people have light-speed ships and course computers. What do you mean? What star does Werrel circle? That's all you need to know."
"But I don't know it."
"This is nonsense," Falk began, pushed by mounting incredulity into anger. Abundabot held up his hand in a curiously potent gesture.
"Let the boy explain, Agadramarin," he whispered.
"Explain that he doesn't know the name of his planet's sun?"
"It's true, Pretchremarin," Ori said shakily, his face crimson. If you were only yourself, you'd know it without being told. I was in my ninth moon phase. I was still first level. The levels... well, our civilization at home, it's different from anything here, I guess. Now that I see it by the light of what the lords here try to do, and democratic ideals, I realize it's very backward in some ways. But anyhow, there are the levels that cut across all the orders and ranks and make up the basic harmony of Prechnoia. I don't know how to say it in Galactica. Knowledge, I guess. Anyway, I was on the first level, being a child, and you were eighth level, and order. And each level has things you don't learn,
and things you aren't told and can't be told or understand until you enter into it. And below the seventh level, I think, you don't learn the true name of the world or the true name of the sun. They're just the world, Werel, and the sun, Prahan. The true names are the old ones, there in the eighth Analect of the books of Altera, the books of the colony. They're in Galactica so that they'd mean something to the lords here, but I couldn't tell them because I didn't know. All I know is sun and world, and that wouldn't get me home, nor you, if you can't remember what you knew. Which sun? Which world? Oh, you've got to let them give you your memory back, Pretramarin. Do you see?
That's through a glass, Falk said. Darkly.
And with the words from the Yahweh canon, he remembered, all at once, certain and vivid amidst his bewilderment, the sun shining above the clearing, bright on the windy, branch-embowered balconies of the forest house. Then it was not his name he had come here to learn, but the sun's, the true name of the sun.